Big show for you here today. Charles McDonald joins me for, yes, it is time, the wide receiver deep dive episode. We look at all of the relevant wide receiver prospects you need to care about in the first and second round upcoming in the NFL draft. We talk Travis Hunter and just how damn good of a wide receiver prospect he is. We talk about a bunch of guys like Emeka Egbuka and Matthew Golden, why they might be a little bit more landing spot sensitive than a guy like Tetro McMillan. Also, we hit on some guys who are going to go on day two. What do we make of Luther Burden, Jalen Noel? Just how high can I get Charles on Jalen Noel? We'll also give you some day three sleepers to know. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, April 10th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Charles McDonald. Charles, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much. You know, we are cruising at 120 miles per hour every day, it feels like, through draft season. But we are here for your big day, right? The receivers' big day. And I think you've already had a couple receivers' days this week, if I'm following the timeline correctly. But it's always fun to rehash some takes you already said.
Oh, brother, every day is receiver day for me. But Nate and I did a 2-hour extravaganza on Football 301 previewing the wide receiver prospects. And, you know, it was so much fun. I was like, let's just do it again. Let's do it with Charles. Let's see if he can tell me I'm an idiot. Nate and I maybe agreed too much on this class, so I'm hoping you have some pushback here for me. But yes, as Charles mentioned, this is the receiver day. But in addition to that, this is the first time ever we are live on YouTube, X, and Facebook. So if you're watching on any of those platforms right now, welcome in. Appreciate you tuning in. If you're listening to the podcast, like normal, nothing changes for you. But as Charles said, the draft is just 2 weeks away. We are rocketing towards this thing. Big announcement for that. We're going to be live as well on draft day. Yahoo Sports is going to have a live draft show for the entirety of the first and second day of the NFL draft. More details to come on that, but you can be very excited about it. I'll be a part of it. Charles is going to be a part of it. Nate is going to be a part of it. So definitely make sure you bookmark, you subscribe here on YouTube, everything like that, so you can watch that draft show. But enough of the pleasantries. Let's continue our draft deep dive series with, as Charles mentioned, you know, he calls them the not real football players, the wide receivers, which I find offensive, Charles, because this is like the only reason I'm here is because of the wide receiver position. So if you are trying to cancel wide receivers, you're trying to cancel me, which I do find a little bit offensive. But we're going to do a deep dive on this class, as always. First segment is going to be dedicated to kind of the big names, the first round guys. Second segment, we'll look at some day two possibilities. And then the third segment, big grab bag of this draft in general and some of the lesser tiered players in this wide receiver class. But Charles, I'll throw this to you first. What is your view of this class as a whole from the wide receiver position?
I like it. I don't know if the super top end talent is there outside of maybe Travis Hunter and how you feel about Tep McMillan from Arizona. But I kind of think there's something for everyone, at least like in the top, let's call it 100 picks. But I think also resembles some of the wide receiver classes that we've seen in years past where, you know, I was talking before we got on the show, I've been working on like all juice team with Charles Robinson, the big boy with Nate Tice this week. And just like, watching college football, there's so many good young receivers in the game, and we're starting to see that being reflected in draft classes. And while, like, it's like I said, maybe you're not looking at last year where you got Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers and Romo Dunes kind of headlining it, but there's still a lot of good players, I think, once you get down past like the top two guys probably.
Yeah, I agree with you. I came into this year thinking that this is going to be a weaker class, which Nate's the one who says this, that like we're probably never going to get a truly bad wide receiver class ever again because there's just so much talent at the position. There's so much specialization, even from like running routes at a very young age for these guys because of 7-on-7 and just, again, the way the entire sport is trending. So, yeah, I don't think we'll ever get like a truly bad wide receiver class again. This group in particular, it's certainly not last year's where I think there was just such a wealth of guys who, number one, did go in the first round but could have gone in the first round. Like, Ladd McConkey could have been a first round pick last year, and mm-hmm. I certainly would have been completely on board with that. And we had those three, to me, tier one superstar wide receiver prospects. We don't have that strength at the top of the class this year because we only have one tier one player, and that guy, he probably is going to play wide receiver at this point. It's trending that way. But, you know, at the beginning of the process, Travis Hunter is a tier one prospect at wide receiver to me, and we'll talk about him in just a second. At the beginning of the process, Charles, you know, even back at the combine, that was certainly not the consensus opinion. So I have found, the more I've studied this class, and I'm curious if you agree, like, if you're looking for a wide receiver two, a wide receiver three, like on an NFL team, I'm not talking from a fantasy perspective, but like if you're looking for a number two receiver, number three receiver, there's a wealth of guys on day two that I really, really like.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Like I said before, I think there's a receiver prospect for everyone in this draft. Like, even watching Iowa State, I was like, wow, like, y'all got two of these guys that are going to be NFL players. That's Iowa State. It's funny because when you start like digging through the receiver stuff, man, there's just so much quarterback play that you really just got to slug through, and it's really tough sometimes. But I think, you know, even with how some of these offenses look, it's cool that some of these guys were still able to showcase their talent and at least make a case for being, real impact players at the next level.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some bad quarterback play throughout the course of the receiver section here. We're also going to talk about some true, you know, Charles and I, we love to bag on the Looney Tunes offenses, some of these goofy systems. So I'm sure we'll be doing some of that here as well. But let's waste no more time. Let's dive into it here. Let's talk Travis Hunter at the top of the class. I'm sure people have seen it by now, the all green reception perception chart on Travis Hunter. I'm a big fan of him as a wide receiver prospect, Charles, but I want to hear what you think when you're just viewing him as a wide receiver. And I know you're, and I am as well, very fond of him as a cornerback, but when you just look at him as a wideout, what do you see there?
He's explosive. Like the same thing, some of the same things that make him such a great cornerback prospect also translate to wide receiver. Like the ball skills, the length, the speed, just like general ball tracking ability. Like, he's got just like some natural gifts that I don't think you can teach in terms of like just hand-eye coordination, the athleticism, and I think that it kind of gives him it gives him an edge where he can be like this productive and go win the Biletnikoff Award with 14 receiving touchdowns. Even though I do think there's some areas on his game that he needs to work on, and the more that you know, I interviewed Deion Sanders earlier this week for Football 301, which I think is coming out later today. We've been digging around on, you know, some Travis Hunter stuff for the All Juice team. And I think some of like the imperfections that I see with his wide receiver game are really just related to practice time. And I think you just have to look at it realistically. Like, if you're going to be a player that's playing anywhere from 120 to like 150 snaps in a college football game, you can only really play so much football during the week before you get to game day without just crashing. So it seems like Colorado, they prepared him as a cornerback first, and then the wide receiver stuff was like, well, you can do this too, but we're gonna have to put that on separately. And I think that shows a little sometimes, because, you know, there will be stretches in these games where he's just like kind of really like decoy stuff like on the outside. It's not as bad as like when Corey Coleman was running the Baylor offense, they just wouldn't run routes sometimes. But there's a lot of routes where I think you can see they're trying to conserve his energy and then maybe save him for bigger moments. But with all that said, like, the fact that he can be like this good, while I think that there are still like finer moments and like finer things that he can refine on, being more precise with his routes, being more precise, like being in sync with his teammates sometimes, that's pretty damn exciting too, because it feels like unlimited upside for him as a wide receiver, because you have those traits and you have the proof of production while he's splitting time playing another position. It's pretty remarkable that like again, we're sitting here in the spot where he's like a legitimate first round prospect at two positions. I still see him as cornerback first, but as a wide receiver, I think the what's really exciting about him is just the ceiling is so damn high.
Yeah, unlimited upside, like you said, I think is the way to frame it, because I agree with your points about his route running where, like, yeah, for some of the finer details, they're not there, yet he still obliterates everybody in terms of separation. Like, he's still an elite tier separator. Like, there's a difference between being an elite route runner and elite separator, you know? I mean, they're just, they're two different things, and, you know, you can argue about which one's more important or the other, and some guys are both, right? Like, some guys are Stephon Diggs, they're elite route runners and elite separators, Davante Adams, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, Travis Hunter, I think right now he is, again, he gets open versus everybody, even if some of the routes are not totally tightened up. But you mentioned that. I look forward to listening to the interview with you and Coach Prime, because yeah, he was not practicing as an offensive player. He was barely in the offensive meetings. And I've even heard some people, like, this Nate's biggest flaw with him is just the weight, you know, because he's a sub 190 pounds at over 6 feet tall. I even have talked to some people that have theorized, like, oh, maybe he's that light because his cardio has to be absolutely outrageous. Yeah. You know, because he's playing Yeah, like he's playing 100 damn snaps in a game. And like, you listen to him talk and he definitely is going to try to play both ways. Like, I think he, that's, or at least that's what he wants to do. Now, I think if the Browns take him second overall, he's going to be a wide receiver. Like, they view him as a wide receiver first. You listen to Andrew Berry talk about him, gosh, and he's obsessed, you know? Like, he's absolutely obsessed. So, we can sit here and talk about, yeah, the QB spot, as we're showing on the live feed right now. Big old question mark, you know? I'm not trying to hype up Travis Hunter and then see him catching passes from Kenny Pickett, okay? Let's hope the Browns have something else up their sleeves from a quarterback position, but I mean, he is truly like a gravitational force, a changing player in your offense, that he knocks Jerry Jeudy down to being a second fiddle, which is what he needs to be. You know, I'm still interested in Cedric Tillman as an X receiver. I think Travis Hunter moves around the formation for you. So, like, I get it. I totally understand why they view him as a wide receiver. Again, he is a tier one prospect to me. I like him as much as I liked a guy like Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers last year, just as a pure wide receiver. And I think he's going to change this offense, or any offense, for the better as soon as he hits the field.
Dude, look at this. Like, for those who are listening to audio, we have a graphic of the Cleveland Browns' potential offense. And I think this right here is the argument against picking him number two overall. What are we doing here? The only quarterbacks they have on the roster are Deshaun Watson and Kenny Pickett. As good as anyone thinks Travis Hunter can be, what is he changing about this situation that they have going on there? You know, like, to me, this would just be the most heartbreaking situation for us as football fans, because he goes to a team that has no real hope of being like that competitive in the near future. They're going to have to retool the offensive line. They have the Deshaun Watson contract they'll be dealing with for the next 4 or 5 years. Myles Garrett's about to eat into that too. I really just hope, I hope they pass. I hope they pass just for all of us. Cause what a damn, like, that would suck so much if he ended up in Cleveland.
Yeah. It's really, honestly, it's really mixed. It is mixed feelings from a fantasy angle too, Charles, because, and I've gone back and forth with this about people, like, in no way do I want to sit here and root for one of my favorite receiver prospects that I've ever watched, a guy that I compared to prime Odell Beckham. I don't want to sit here and root for him to play for the damn Cleveland Browns with this big triple question mark at quarterback that we're looking at here. Other questions on this roster too, like, this offensive line is kind of a ticking time bomb. But again, conversation. It's just the fact that we, I think, have very clear indicators that if he goes to Cleveland, he is going to be a wide receiver, from a selfish receiver guy perspective, certainly from somebody that, like, if he is going to land in Cleveland, he'll at worst be the third overall pick in dynasty rookie drafts, just depending on what landing spot Amarian Hampton goes to. If he goes to a great team in the first round, I might think about taking him over Travis Hunter just because of this landing spot. But again, it's like, so it's a little bit of like a conflicted feeling there. I will just say, we saw Malik Nabers go to the Giants last year and just get boatloaded with targets from, you know, miserable quarterbacks. If the Browns take Tyler Shuck on day two and they add Kirk Cousins, I can cope with that enough for Travis Hunter in year one.
Oh, man.
I also do kind of buy the theories, Charles. I don't want to go tangent here, but I also kind of do buy the theory that the Browns, who have an owner who wants to make a splash, they also have just like no hope, you know, as a team right now, that they take Hunter at second overall and then mortgage a little bit of their future, use some extra picks to move back up in the first round to take Shedeur Sanders. I think Todd McShay had that in his most recent mock draft. Again, just an interesting note there. I do kind of buy that that might be something that happens.
Well, shoot, they gotta do something, right? Like,
yeah,
the clock is ticking. We're 2 weeks away from the draft. The only quarterbacks they have on roster are Kenny Pickett and Deshaun Watson. So functionally, the only quarterback they have on roster is Kenny Pickett. That's not tenable. We've all seen Kenny Pickett play. Like, they're just in such prime trade down. Just collect as many picks as you can, but I guess if you're on the hot seat, which I'm going to have to assume that they are in Cleveland,
yeah,
you're just going to have to grab the best player and hope he can jumpstart your offense into being something more significant than it was a year ago, which personally I think is a lot to put on his shoulders year one, because I do think when he gets to the NFL, it's just going to be an adjustment from what he was from what the demands were in college of him playing wide receiver. But right, obviously, yeah, he's got the skill to figure it out. The only thing I have on Travis, as far as like the both ways stuff is, bro, don't do that. Don't do that. You're playing on a rookie deal, man. Don't let them get two positions for one paycheck. That's crazy. So just pick one. Maybe you dabble on the other side in like Hail Mary situations. But if you're going to be a wide receiver, just be a wide receiver. You know, Deion thinks he can do both full time at the next level. I think that's nuts, but we're going to see, right? He's certainly going to try.
He is certainly going to try, and I can't wait to see his development at the wide receiver position, because, like I said, he is one of my favorite prospects I've ever charted. Just an incredible player. Let's move on to kind of the consensus true number one receiver. Like, if we're just talking about a guy who only played that position, that's Tetero McMillan out of Arizona. He wants to go by T-Mac, not Tet, which I think Tet's a great nickname. He should go with Tet. Right. That's a whole other discussion right there. So
are we old now for saying that?
Definitely 100%. If we're sitting here saying to a guy who's like more than 10 years, well, definitely more than 10 years younger than me. I don't know. I forget how old you are, Charles, but I like we're in the same age bracket. Month.
Yeah.
Oh jeez, yeah, you are a little, you know, you're a little younger than I am, but yeah, no. So I'm turning 34 this year, man. I'm high key washed. 34 feels like. It's enough already. But anyways, we're sitting here telling a guy who's about 10 years younger than both of us, we already got one of those nicknames. That, and then we're definitely old for saying that. So anyways, McMillan, really interesting player. Tell me about like your kind of opinion on him as a prospect.
I like him a lot. But, you know, I love the true X wide receivers. Like, I don't think there's any fluff. Like, you're not sitting here, well, I don't know what spot he's gonna play at. Like, no, this is a big dude that I thought was pretty well rounded with the stuff that he showed at Arizona. I think he's one of my favorite receivers in the draft. And what I like about him, which we, you know, kind of hinted towards earlier, is you get to see like the full range of his skill set because his quarterback was so bad.
Right? I mean, his guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that, and he was a guy, the quarterback. He's supposed to be like a draft prospect this year. He's one of a few guys that just totally fell off going into what was supposed to be a big year for them. But you really do get to see every bit of the 6'4", 215, 220, because there was like some high difficulty of degree to his play because of the circumstances. When I started watching, Falcons brand, I started thinking, you know, is this guy like as good as Drake London is? I don't think he's quite that, because, what I thought made Drake so unique for his size was he was so good with the ball in his hand. Once he got moving downfield, like, you could use him like credibly on screen games pretty consistently. Like, the Falcons now, they've turned him into one of the better slot receivers in the league when he lines up there. And he's, you know, 6'4", 220, I don't think Tet is quite that level of flexible, maybe, but I still do think that the best case scenario for him is like a true outside number one wide receiver that maybe has a smidge easier time because the quarterback play is going to get a little bit better for him. I feel like the opinions on T-Mac are a little bit all over the place, though, because, you know, like, Nate has him as one of like probably the 5 to 10 best players in the draft. There are people who see him as like, you know, late second round or late first round, you know, early day two guy. But mm-hmm. I tend to think he's closer to being a top half of the draft player than the other way around.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you. Top half of the draft player. He's not quite what I would call like a tier one prospect. Like again, these guys from last year, and I want to throw that to you here in a second as well. But you mentioned the Drake London comparison. I think he belongs on the same family of wide receivers that Drake London belongs to, which is these guys that can move around the formation, but are true X receivers. And like just comparing him differently to Drake London, like we're showing the route chart right now from reception perception, like he's definitely not a long speed guy. Like he's not going to threaten you from a getting open perspective on nine routes, but he absolutely can win the ball in contested situations. I think he's a little bit overrated as a ball winner just because just some minor issues, but he is a good contested catch receiver and he's a good ball winner. I just think he's not like quite elite in just in terms of like fighting for the ball and things of that nature. But he also is not Drake London on quick routes like slants and curls and stuff like that. London was a better separator there, which is why I think he's closer to like the peak of this family of wide receivers, which is, you know, Michael Thomas, Drake London. I think that's like the peak of this wide receiver family. Then there's guys like Michael Pittman, Cortland Sutton, and I think McMillan is somewhere in that. Like I think he compares really well to Cortland Sutton. That's been my comp for him basically since I started charting him. And Cortland Sutton's a guy who's a number one receiver for an offense that outkicked expectations last year. He's probably best as a really, really good number two, but you can get away with him being a number one. I think that's how I view McMillan in the league. And so again, I think Charles, if we're stacking him up, and I'm curious where you like, if we had to group the guys from last year in this class, you know, obviously the top three and then Brian Thomas Jr. I thought Brian Thomas was a hair better than McMillan is as a prospect, but we know who Brian Thomas became in the league. I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about just as a prospect. I think in last year's class, he'd be kind of firmly wide receiver five-ish for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It goes to speak like how crazy last year was. Because even when you start looking at someone like Brian Thompson or Thomas from last year, even if you had concerns about some of the, you know, the imprecisions in his game. I mean, the dude was clearly just a freak of nature athlete. And it showed immediately once he got to Jacksonville. So I don't think that's really a crazy take. I think last year before the draft started, Nate and I had Brian Thomas as just as a fringe top 10 player. So if you're kind of still in that range for McMillan, I think that's fair. Maybe a lowerish upside, wide receiver one. But I still think that, you know, at his best in the NFL, he's still someone that could probably handle like 140 target load, and be one of the better wide receivers on your team. But not quite, you know, the Marvin Neighbors, BTJ Odunes type prospects that we saw last year, in my opinion.
Do you have an ideal like team fit for him? Because I think there are teams in the top 10 who could take a number one receiver. I'm thinking Patriots. I'm thinking Raiders. I'm thinking Panthers. I'm not sure he's going to go to any of those three teams. So then it kind of leaves to, you know, a team like the Cowboys at 12. I think if I was Dallas, I would strongly consider him at 12. I think he's in this draft. You can absolutely take a guy like this 12th overall. And I love the idea of him being an X receiver alongside CeeDee Lamb. I think that just really completes this pass catching core.
Yeah, I think Cowboys is the cleanest fit for him. Because I think sometimes what happens with roster building is, you know, you get, we'll stack a bunch of guys who can do, you know, a bunch of different things, but they're not always great at one thing. And you kind of get like just as congested blob. I think what the Seahawks have done with Cooper Kupp and JSN is going to end up being that this year. But with the Cowboys, I think especially with a quarterback like Dak, who you know, at his best is just plays on precision, plays on timing, plays with accuracy. I think it's just best to have some defined roles in their offense. So if you can have Tet and CeeDee, like CeeDee is obviously your slot guy. No one's going to push him out of there. And then Ted is someone you can move around and have win on the outside. That's something that I think could really help them just stabilize the offense and get back to looking like the unit that we know they can be. Because you know, I think what one interesting thing we saw while Dak was healthy last year was, wow, outside of CeeDee Lamb, don't have too much by the name of wide receiver talent. It got pretty thin pretty fast. So to adding someone like him, this would be a pretty big boost for the Cowboys offense. And frankly, it'd be fun to watch because I'm always excited when some of these rookie quarterbacks, they don't have to go to horrible situations, and getting to play with what I think is one of the best quarterbacks in the league would definitely be a good start for him.
Yeah, and I think Dak is a good fit for him, especially on those like intermediate routes we showed earlier. That would be like just a strong kind of synergy there. Let's move to our next guy here, which is Emeka Egbuka out of Ohio State. I'll start on him, Charles, because I'm a big fan of Emeka Egbuka. I actually think he is, to me, in the same tier of prospect as McMillan. Now, McMillan is a true X, and Emeka is just like an ideal power slot. But I love this type of receiver. Now, if I'm comparing him kind of to JSN, because I think that's an easy comparison because he's Ohio State, he's a slot receiver. I think JSN was a flashier player because he was a better man coverage beater than Egbuka is, but Egbuka's like the superior dirty work guy to me. Great hands. He's an awesome zone beater. I think people get hung up on the upside of this type of receiver, which is hilarious because I think his reception perception data compares so similarly to Amon-Ra St. Brown's early career NFL data. And who's whining about the upside of Amon-Ra St. Brown when he, you know, is one of the most productive receivers in the league? He's one of the highest paid receivers in the league. Again, I know that certain offenses are going to maximize that type of receiver more than others. And so obviously from a fantasy perspective, it really is going to matter where he lands. If we're talking about like, what's the dynasty upside for a player like this, who isn't a vertical threat, needs to play inside. But I really like his skills translating to that role. So Charles, this is just one of the things when we're scouting for all 32 teams, hypothetically, it's harder to pinpoint like where a guy like this, if he fits for every team, but if he lands in the right spot, I think he could be a great number two receiver and like a guy that isn't, again, incredibly productive, similar to like a St. Brown. But I don't think we've talked about Egbuka at all. Where are you with him?
Oh, I've loved watching him for like 3 years now. I honestly thought that he was going to, there was a chance he was going to come out last year with Marvin. But I think he got banged up, didn't probably have the season he wanted to, and then get to come back and have just the absolute obliteration they did of every team in the college football playoff. But he's just like a classic slot receiver. And I thought that last year, or even like the past 2 years of Egbuka, would be kind of cool because I think you get to see what his ideal role is in the NFL, because the last 2 years he's had a truly dominant X receiver to play with. Last year or 2 years ago, Marvin Harrison Jr. This year, I mean, all world Jeremiah Smith, who should be allowed to go to the NFL because he's 18 and you can join the Army. Yeah. So why not? Look at that guy, man. Like, that guy should be playing the NFL. But going back to Egbuka, like, he's just a really clean starter. He runs routes well from the slot. He blocks, like, you hear him talk. He's just a high effort, high character guy. Like, I would just be kind of surprised if this guy ended up failing in the league because he's got so many good traits. And then, like, you go to the combine, then I think some of the, you know, sometimes these slot receivers, they get typecast as like, you know, not the fastest guys. And, you know, he's not running a 4.3 out here, but he did run in the 4.4s in workouts this offseason. So I think he's checking a lot of boxes. Yeah, I've talked to some people where they're like, oh, you know, like, he's a good player, and you look at the first round, but like, when you look at some of like the per game production stats, it's not maybe what you would expect from a potential like first round receiver from Ohio State. But I do think in this era of football, like, we kind of have to recalibrate how we think about some of the guys on top teams, mm-hmm. especially like Ohio State, where, I mean, they have put a wide receiver to the first round damn near every single year, it feels like, over what, like, the past decade. So those
sometimes
guys,
two.
They're all
I mean, in 22, it was two of them.
Right. So sometimes when you start like looking at teams that are this stacked with talent, I mean, there's a finite amount of football plays in the game. There's a finite amount of time, a finite amount of touches that you can dish out. So yeah, 1,000 yards in 16 games in college last year, I can understand where people can get those ideas from, but I think his game just translates so cleanly to the NFL that I'm pretty excited for him.
Yeah, very safe prospect is always tough, safe, but he does feel like a very, he does feel safe, you know? And again, it just depends on the team in terms of maximizing him from a production standpoint in the NFL. I just think about a team like Houston, you know, that has an X receiver. They have a guy there, but they need like a true second fiddle. And I think he's a guy who could play flanker, especially if you're running him out on outbreaking routes from condensed formations. He can win in that regard. You have a guy who's obviously has already played with CJ Stroud, but even just taking that out of your mind a little bit, like an accurate player who loves to throw out routes to the far side of the field, you can get Igbuka doing that alongside a guy like Nico Collins. That's the right type of landing spot for him. So yeah, to me, again, people whine about the idea, and this is actually going to transition us to our next guy here in Matthew Golden, who I also think is an ideal number two. Charles, one thing I think we need to recalibrate our kind of expectations to with just these players coming into the league, you know, because I've gotten a lot of pushback. Like, oh, you can't take Emeka Igbuka in the first round. He's a number two receiver. Matthew Golden, you think he's a number two? You can't take a number two receiver in the first round. Yo, look at what guys are getting paid right now at the wide receiver market. Deami Brown made $10 million. Tutu Atwell made $10 million. Like, it, number two receivers, and those guys are probably ideal, threes at best. Like, so that's what number three receivers are making. Yeah, like, you want a good number two, you're going to get Emeka Igbuka, good number two. Matthew Golden, again, I want to hear your thoughts on him because I think he would be a solid number two receiver in the league. Those guys are making big time money now, number two receivers. You could get a potential real deal value with a Matthew Golden or Emeka Igbuka. So go ahead on Golden, because he's the guy who there's big opinions on him, especially from the dynasty community, who, you know, emphasizes production and early production in your career. Most of Matthew Golden's production was at the very end of his collegiate career, so he is on the other end of that. But then you see guys who, like big media folks like Daniel Jeremiah was on the show with us this week. He's a big Matthew Golden fan. He has him ranked as the number one receiver in the class.
What? Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah, and he's not alone on that. Like, I mean, not Travis Hunter. Like, I'm put Hunter aside for a second. Like, he's got Golden over Igbuka, McMillan. I think Todd McShay is another guy who has Golden as the wide receiver one. Steve Smith has Matthew Golden as the number one wide receiver. So it seems like folks, there are a handful of people out there who view him as the best receiver in the class. What do you think?
I think that's crazy. I think that's nuts. He's a good player, but I just think there's something to the idea that, like, almost all his production came in the back half of the season, which I honestly think is kind of a good description of his game, because to me it's boom or bust. When you add someone like, when you add someone like Matthew Golden to your team, I think you are clearly saying we need to figure out how to generate big plays, which is obviously at a premium in the NFL. Because even if you're just looking at, you know, some of the like, just if you just look at the game logs for like the last month of games that he played, he's got a long of 44, a long of 50, a long of 43, a long of 54. You know, that's what you're chasing when you go get someone like Matthew Golden. Obviously, we've seen the athleticism throughout the combine, but I just don't know how you could watch his game and say, oh, this is going to be like the number one receiver on my offense. I just think there needs to be a little bit more, maybe in terms of consistently winning, like on underneath stuff, because I think a lot of his game is just predicated on, you know, we're going to beat you deep, and in college that can be a strategy, because a really conducive strategy to winning, because the game is built differently. There's a lot more space that you have to throw to on some of these far hash throws, where you can take advantage of the speed. But when things get a little bit condensed in the NFL, I think there's some questions on how, you know, when you can't get open 40 yards down the field, when you're not getting open 30 yards down the field, how does the rest of your game translate? Which is going to be where the vast majority of NFL offenses operate, because it's not, you know, as big play oriented as college football. I just think that there's some concerns about how, like, the compressed part of his game works in terms of him being like the number one wide receiver on your offense. To me, he's like a high end two that has years where he looks like a one, because he can get open, he can get deep, and once he gets deep, like, he really can hit the afterburners and shred defenses.
I think we're kind of in lockstep on this one here. I don't even have him in, like, the same tier as a prospect as Igbuka or McMillan, and obviously certainly not Travis Hunter. Now, like, let me be clear, like, that I still think you could take him in the first round. I have him grouped with guys.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, historically, yeah, and just like when I reference my stacked rankings and stuff like that, and we show the route charts, those are all at receptionperception.com. People have to subscribe, you know. I'd encourage you to check it out. I'd love it if you checked it out. But with the stacked rankings, like, I have him grouped with guys, you know, like Zay Flowers previously, who, again, was a first round pick, and I don't think the Ravens regret that pick at all. The other guy I've got him kind of like very close to is Jordan Addison. And I kind of think that when you're looking at Jordan Addison, that's sort of the role I'd like to see Matthew Golden fulfill, because Addison has not been like a consistent player in his NFL career, but when they've, and it's only been 2 years, of course, but in the back half of last season, he was putting up these monster games and making these monster plays because he's the number two receiver across from one of the two best receivers in football. And like, the entire point of the Vikings drafting Jordan Addison, and Kevin O'Connell even said this when they took him, is that he was going to get some of the easiest coverage looks in the NFL. And because he's not a perfect route runner, but he's a snappy route runner. I think Golden is also like a snappy route runner, really good against zone coverage. He's not great in like the quick game and things like that. He can get pressed off the line, and he's not great at that, but neither is Addison, but he can really beat zone coverage down the field. And again, that's where I'd see Matthew Golden on these like big in-breaking routes really making a big impact in the NFL. So when I think of Golden, I want to see him on a team like Dallas. You know, again, is it too high to pick him 12th overall? We could maybe argue that, but tactically, as the flanker working in concert with CeeDee Lamb and kind of Jalen Tolbert as the sacrificial X, I think that's a really good fit. I think he'd be awesome on the Rams offense too, moving around with guys like Adams and Puka Nacua. I just don't know if they, I don't know if number one, I don't know if he's going to get there, and that might be a little bit too many guys on one offense.
That would be really funny to pay Tutu and draft Matthew Golden
and then just replace him with Matt. But like that's like making the Tutu Atwell role like actually useful.
Right. It's kind of funny, like, because man, I'm just stuck on the best wide receiver in the draft stuff. That's a little bit of a stretch to me, but. You know, I do think that the Jordan Addison comp, like, stylistically works, because like to me, this is like the ideal wide receiver to have if you have a number one. Like, if you have someone that you can count on, someone like Matthew Golden is only going to be a floor raiser for your offense, because you already have someone that can consistently get open. Like, I'm trying to think, like, the Rams, that would be a good fit. It'd be a lot of mouths to feed. You know, in one off season, I'm sure someone's getting the short end of the stick, and it will probably be Golden based on how we know how Stafford likes to operate. If he's got two dudes, those guys will get the targets. You know, it's been true in every part of his career. If he's got two guys he trusts, they're getting the targets, even including guys like Theo Riddick. So it's kind of tough to see that as the cleanest fit, but I think as you start scrolling down like the first round of the draft, I think a spot that I don't know if they would take him because they tend to like bigger guys and they like the blocking, but I think Green Bay would kind of be an interesting spot for him because they just need someone who can take the top off of the defense. Like, when we saw the Packers at their worst this year as the season went on, I think the offense just got so congested. You didn't have too many easy buttons outside of, you know, just trying to hand it to Josh Jacobs and seeing how many guys he could just muscle his way through. So, you know, it's probably not the cleanest fit with someone like Christian Watson already there, but just any team that, like, if you're already kind of close to getting to the playoffs and you're just you think you're just a piece away, I think it makes a lot of sense. Even someone like, I think Houston, you would even make sense for Golden because they kind of have to rebuild their wide receiver room. You already got Nico Collins. Who knows what Tank Dell is going to be whenever he gets back from his injuries. And I think when you have Nico Collins, you could add someone like Matthew Golden. It would help them not look like they did last year. But to me, like I said before, this is a number two wide receiver that goes perfectly with like a big bodied X that you already have.
One more fit I'd throw out there in that vein that I don't see too often is, what about the Arizona Cardinals? They pick in the middle of the first round. They definitely could use somebody to stretch out the defense, right, to really help out their run game, similar to what you talked about with Green Bay. And I think he'd be, again, like an ideal complement to a big-bodied X receiver. Now, I want to see Marvin Harrison Jr. move around more than just play X, but again, Golden can also help you accomplish that, because while he's not an ideal X, you can run him, you can sit him out there at the X receiver position and have him like run some gassers and for the love of the game routes and stretch out the defense and stuff like that. So any of these spots I think would be good for Golden, but Charles and I are in lockstep here that he does probably have to be a number two in the NFL. We're going to take our first break. We come back, we're going to pick up the pace and run through some round two guys right after this. All right, we are back. Let's get into some guys that we think are going to go in the second round. Now, any of these guys could potentially surprise us and go in the first round. I wouldn't rule that out just because of, like I talked about earlier, contracts, stuff like that. We saw guys that were not projected to go in the first round last year, Charles, like Xavier Leggett and Ricky Pearsall, sneak into the end of the first round. Wouldn't rule out that some of these guys maybe jump in there too if it's just the right team fit. But let's talk about Luther Burden out of Missouri, a guy that had a lot of hype before the season, has had a lot of hype dating back to his high school career, but is ending his collegiate career on a bit of a sour note. I have a lot of thoughts about Burden, Charles. I'm very curious to see where you come down on, I think maybe the most confusing evaluation in this class.
This might get me slandered by, you know, my friends that I talk to about the draft the most, but I still like Luther Burden. But I also never viewed him as like, you know, there were people coming into the season, you know, they calling him potentially the best player in the draft. Like, I thought that was insane, even like last summer. He's a quality player. I think he's a starter. I like what he does with the ball in his hands. I think he's a quality route runner, maybe not the best route runner, but what I think happened this year, honestly, with him, and I don't, like, one of the worst parts to me about draft season is, like, when you're sitting around making excuses for guys that you like, and I'm about to do that here.
Yes.
The quarterback play. Holy crap, bro. Like, that's another guy, Brady Cook, you know, in the same breath as the Arizona quarterback we talked about earlier. Brady Cook was supposed to be a guy this year who had, like, potential, like, mid-round ability as far as the NFL goes, because, I swear to God, if you go back to 2023, he did not look like that. I don't know what happened to him this year, but it's kind of like the Carson Beck conundrum. Something happened where he fell off a cliff because, boy, oh boy, was he bad. And like bad in a way where, you know, you have whatever you think about Luther Burden as a draft prospect, he's undeniably one of the best players in college football. And they struggled to like generate offense with him. It's something that they didn't, that was not an issue a year before when he was lighting the world on fire. So it, to me, the Luther Burden situation became a thing of perception versus reality. I've always been in the minority or in the camp that he's close to like a late first, early second round kind of player. But I do think that there's just a lot of value for having a player like that who is explosive with the ball in his hands, who has a nose for big plays, who has a nose for the end zone. And while I know last year didn't go as he was planning, I do think a lot of that can just be chalked up to situation. And maybe that showed to a lot of people he's probably not like this dominant number one receiver that you were thinking of coming into the year. But I don't think that's necessarily a knock on like who he is as a prospect. I still think he's a starting slot receiver in the league, you know, someone that can win over the middle of the field. And if you can get the ball in his hands in some creative ways, it can be a source of big plays for you.
Yeah. The reason I called him like the most confusing evaluation in this class is because I actually kind of think that he has the highest ceiling of any of these non-Travis Hunter guys now, but is he going to get to that ceiling? That I actually think is a Luther Burden question, which we'll come back to in just a second. But like when you're just looking at him, like you mentioned him as a route runner. I actually thought he has some very brief flashes of really good quality man coverage beating routes, but they are flashes. I mean, look, the out route success rate really shows it. Like he can snap off routes that break to the outside extremely well against man coverage from the slot. you just don't see a lot of it. Like, he ran more routes against zone than almost any other prospect I've charted since I've been doing college prospects, because of the role that he's playing in as almost a pure slot receiver. And he gets a lot of these like Mickey Mouse touches. Now, he's not a Mickey Mouse receiver. I think he's got a lot more potential than one of those guys, because he shows you, like, I would call him like Bud Light Malik Nabers flashes when he's running routes from the slot, but they're very few and far in between. You got to go hunt for him. I think he does not have a very good feel for zone coverage. I also think his effort is not great. Like, I hate to say that stuff about players, but you can see that for him, man. Dude, I hate. I'm gonna be a boomer for a second, because like, you absolutely see it at times with him where he just like runs into guys against zone coverage and then just, that's it. Like, play is over. And, you know, obviously there are some character concerns with him just in terms of stuff like that. Not that he's like a bad guy or anything, but just how dialed in is he? People do have those questions. Like, they again, that's out there with him. And it's, I think, the biggest reason that he is considered more of a second round prospect than a first round prospect. Like I said, how good is Luther Burden going to be? That's up to Luther Burden. Like, I think if he locks all the way in, he could be like a Bud Light Malik Nabers, or like a better man coverage version of Rashee Rice, or like a souped up Khalil Shakir. And that player is really valuable in today's league. Like, Chris Godwin, I'm not saying he's Chris Godwin because he doesn't play with the same like tenacity as a blocker or anything of that nature, but man, that type of player was on pace to be the best and most productive receiver in the league before Chris Godwin got hurt. When we're talking about these teams, too high shells, all these things, like, how can you create explosives? You get the ball in Luther Burden's hand because he can get open on his own in addition to created touches. Like, again, that ceiling is very, very high. I just think the floor on him is also pretty low for both on and off field reasons.
Oh yeah. I would agree with that. I think the floor is low. And I do ultimately think that if he ends up in round two, that's fine. I think that's perfectly fine for where he's at right now. But I'm with you. I still think there's some untapped upside here. I think that the zone stuff, the point about him seeing some of the zone is funny, because it's like college defenses, they you know, there's kind of like two ways to attack these quarterbacks that just aren't very good. You know, you can blitz them. Like, sometimes, like, that's what teams like Georgia and like Penn State will do. Like, oh, you suck. Like, man, we're just going to kill you. Then that's fine. But if you, there's also teams that they'll just sit back and just drop eight in coverage and quarterback can't do nothing. And you just kind of live like 4 yards at a time through the air. I do think just in a more maybe competent passing game, he'll look better in the NFL. But, you know, I don't have him, like, if we're just looking at, like, the slot guy we talked about, like, I don't think he's as good as, like, Buka. I think he's got the upside to be, you know, a really good pro, but just not quite there yet. Like, this is someone where, like, Luther Burden can't be the first person you add to your wide receiver room, in my opinion. Like, you would need to add a couple guys, because he's not going to be, at least off the bat, someone that can really carry a passing offense from a volume standpoint.
Yeah. All right. I think we're kind of in lockstep here, but I'm curious to see if we can get Charles to boo me again on my own show. That was that's a highlight of draft season so far. You know what, though? I deserved it. I can't.
Yeah,
I,
you, got, that you, was got, some, you got old that there. Was some,
yeah, that was like, we're going to see some grays up here pretty soon. That was a tough look for me. But I hope you don't boo me on any of my Jalen Knoll takes, because he's the next guy I want to talk about here out of Iowa State. You mentioned it. They have two dudes that were really good last year in Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins. We'll get to Higgins in a second. I strongly prefer Jalen Knoll if we're looking at the two prospects here, Charles. This guy's just like right up my alley. What do you think of him as a prospect?
Oh, don't make me pick between the two. I was thinking about it last night. Literally couldn't do it. There's so much to like about both of them. But Noel, like, God, he's so explosive. Like, he's so explosive. And I think that, like, you saw it at the combine too, where you get 4.39 40, 41.5-inch vert. The agility times are great. You know, he's one of the rare true competitors that we have amongst the Gen Zers who did every workout. this offseason. You got drill, you got times and scores for every drill. So Jalen Noel, we salute your competitive nature.
Okay, who just got older? I'm not booing you. I'm applauding you for that take. But I mean, yeah.
Hey, when we were at the combine, I did a back in my day bit about Julio Jones, yeah. And that guy retired this week. That literally was back in my day. That was almost 15 years ago. So yeah, I'm not the spring chicken around here. But I might be on this show, but it's not a good sign for where we're headed. but with Noel, getting back to it, like the first point that we have up here on the screen obliterates man coverage. To me, that goes hand in hand with some of the traits we just talked about, like the speed, the explosiveness, the suddenness, just to get in and out. He's just such a well-coordinated athlete. I'm kind of looking at, I would say, like, how did you get two of these guys? We'll talk about Higgins in a second. But Noel, like, this is a real deal starting wide receiver. I like him better than Luther Burden. I think his upside is absolutely insane. I think he kind of plays some outside in the league. You know, same. There was a Ladd McConkey comp that we saw on the screen. Ladd was able to do some of that this year. I don't know if it's going to be like maybe where he consistently wins, but like when you're talking about traits like this, talking about the production he had, some of the skills, I really see a case where this could be a big time boom pick for a team.
Oh yeah, I love him. He's really like neck and neck in terms of success rate versus man coverage and reception perception with a guy like Ladd McConkey, who, as you mentioned, is a slot mostly player, but certainly not a slot only player. Actually was more productive from a yards per route run standpoint outside than inside in his rookie year, is Ladd McConkey. And I think we could see something similar with Jalen Noel, who I think compares really cleanly to Josh Downs. You and I did obviously we did the series for a few years now. You know how big of a fan I was with Josh Downs, who went in the freaking third round, which is just embarrassing. And he's just one of the more efficient receivers in the league on like a per play basis right now. So Jalen Noel, I think, could be that type of guy. Immediate efficiency boost for any NFL offense. Now, obviously, you do want to get him from the slot on vertical plays, as you see, like dig route, out routes, post routes. All those are really good routes for him. Like, you're not just getting one of these bunny hop pop gun receivers. So I have him in the same tier as guys like Burden, Golden. I would consider him as like a guy that could sneak into the late first round in this draft class because he just checks so many boxes. He's productive. Defensive coaches were clearly very, like, I think clearly more worried about him than Jaden Higgins when they faced him. It's just a really good player. Athleticism at the combine, the whole deal. If you're not size profiling, there's really nothing not to like about his game. I'm a big fan of Jalen Noel. That's kind of like my guy in this class. I want to move to another guy who, God, I really like. I like this player like maybe an irresponsible amount, Charles. That's Jack Besh out of TCU. Probably the guy owns the best trivia of the class, which is that he led the 2021 LSU Tigers with 43 catches. The other members of that team in that wide receiver room, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., and Trey Palmer and Kayshon Booty. Like, obviously, that's a big drop-off in terms of names I just had there. But, like, those guys are NFL players. Jack Besh led that team in receiving as, like, kind of a tight end slot receiver hybrid. He was also the MVP of the Senior Bowl. Great story, obviously, there with his brother was killed in the New Orleans terrorist attacks this past year. So that was a pretty cool moment for him to have that. But Jack Besh, like I said, Charles, I just dropped his profile on receptionperception.com this morning. I am a big fan of this guy. Where do you come down on him as a player?
He's a solid player. You know, I'm trying not, like, when I watch someone like Bench, I'm not trying not to like stereotype him, but you know, he does a lot of good dirty work. Honestly, a lot of good dirty work. Know. like if there's someone in this class that I need to go over the middle and catch a pass without caring about their brain health, this guy might be close to the top of the list. We're just giving like all the white guy wide receiver compliments here, but like he's tough, works well underneath. He's really, really like, I think the fear or the lack of fear to go up and like extend himself and leave himself open for potentially big hits is really impressive because you know, your body's just not really wired to do stuff like that. So when you see guys like that and are willing to take the hits, I just tend to really respect that about his game. Not a number wide receiver. I don't think he's anywhere near that in the NFL. I think it's kind of telling that he didn't run a 40 time this offseason, as far as I can tell. And I think that shows up a little bit on his game. Not the fastest guy. Like, if you look at the route success, reception perception, the nines in the corners, not the greatest in terms of success by route. But that's not where he wins. You know, I think he's just, you know, a classic slot receiver that you're going to put there for a few years and be really happy with where you are. But again, this is not going to be the number one wide receiver on your team, but someone who fills a really clean role that I think projects well to the NFL. So, you know, I'm rooting for him. I've had, you know, fun following his film and, you know, his journey this offseason. So if he lands with the right team, you know, again, another one of these guys that probably needs to join a receiver room that's already been established a little bit. But there's a lot to like about what he brings, you know, as far as like slot work in the NFL.
Yeah, man. I mean, absolutely. He needs the right team that can maximize this type of player. Now, I don't think he needs to line up in the slot because he was mostly a slot receiver his first 3 years in college, two at LSU and then one at TCU the year before last. But in the games I charted for him, he was primarily an outside on the ball player. Now, I don't think he's going to do that in the league, but he was awesome against press coverage. He's got a good set of release moves. He does really separate well underneath. Like you mentioned it, that nine round success rate stinks. I mean, just flat out, 41% is not good. He cannot threaten you down the field vertically, but he is a ball winner. Great in contested situations. He's awesome after the catch, man. He's one of the best, like, yeah, doesn't go down on first contact players I've ever charted. Like, yeah, everybody's trying to dance around the Cooper Kupp comparison for obvious reasons, but like, he does compare pretty well to Cooper Kupp, especially if you're not thinking about like, I won the damn triple crown Cooper Kupp. You're thinking about like early career Cooper Kupp. Like, I think he does like play in the slot. You block a lot. You're just a tough, reliable player. You know, I mean, but from a route running perspective, in terms of how quickly he separates and just absolutely thumps players on underneath and intermediate routes, reminds me a little bit of like Keenan Allen, if we want to talk about a slot receiver with size, and they have similar size. People forget how like big Keenan Allen is, but he is over 200 pounds. He's 6'2". He might have been well over 200 pounds this last year with the Chicago Bears, but in his prime, he was a little bit over 200 pounds. He's a 6'2 guy. Like Besh, pretty similar build there. I think it is going to take the right team. Man, if I was Jacksonville, 36th overall pick, I would turn that card in so fast, because you know Liam Cohen can maximize this type of receiver. It comes from the Rams. Obviously, Chris Godwin last year, he's that type of guy. He allows you to play Brian Thomas Jr. on these vertical routes outside. Really complimentary duo there. That's the type of team I'd love to see. Like us Besh bros, and I'm the Besh bro here. Like, that's where we want to see Jack Besh land.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe top of the second round feels a little rich to me. Only because I just feel like you can find someone who's a little more explosive there. Sure. That can play in the same role. But again, we're talking about someone who's going to do like all the things that other receivers hate to do, and he's going to be tough after the catch, like you said. So like I think like when you watch his game, I can kind of see why he didn't run a 40. The jumps he had weren't all that great at the combine. I think some of the reason why like he's gotten good at contested catches is because he kind of has a lot, whether that's due to TCU's quarterback play or his own speed. Because sometimes like on these deep routes, like the guy's right on his ass, like as the ball gets there.
Oh yeah,
we know NFL right on him. Man, we know that NFL DBs are going to be a little faster, so I think that's going to be an adjustment for him. But like that Jaguars fit, I think is nice. I just don't know if I'll pull the trigger at 36.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit higher on Besh probably than you are, but I'm a sucker for this type of receiver. Let's talk about a different guy who is not this type of receiver but is an explosive player, and that is Trey Harris out of the Mickey Mouse Looney Tunes offense there at Ole Miss. But I will say, Charles, like Trey Harris looks like an NFL receiver. Like when you just look at him, like on film, this is a very dumb take I have, but he just looks like an NFL receiver. Like it's just a classic, maybe kind of throwback X. But in terms of looking at him as a player, what do you see of him as a wide receiver prospect?
I think he's probably closer to developmental guy. If the I don't really know if that's a knock. Obviously he's got some talent, he's got some skill. In Ole Miss's offense, like it's one of those offenses where, you know, they have a lot of plays where guys are running wide open, especially against some of these crappier teams that they play, where it's so spread out. Oh, yeah. They don't have the speed to cover it. So I do think that gives you a good glimpse on like the kind of athlete that he is. But I still think that there's a lot of room to grow in terms of just the finer points, like just route running in general. I think he could improve on, like, when you look at some of these routes down the field where he's getting open and he's making big plays. Some of these are not like the cleanest routes in the world. It's just, we have to cover, you know, way more space on the back end in college than we do in NFL because of the hash mark difference. And when you have, like we talked about before, when you have that hash mark difference, that's where like some of the better athletes really, really shine. And I think that's where he wins. But to drop this guy in as like your starting X receiver and like, oh, that's our plan for this year, I don't know how well that would go, because he needs a year or two of marinating with like some real deal, you know, coaching in terms of, this is how precise we're going to have to run our routes. This is where you need to be. You know, the quarterback could just drop this, that, and third. Just more raw than ready to me right now in terms of Trey Harris.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's raw. He does show some flashes of like crafty route running. He's good against man coverage, but like the success by route chart shows it perfectly. I mean, it's nine routes. I do think he stops down and like works back to the ball well on curls. That was his most commonly run route. He does have a really high success rate, which is, I mean, dude, it just slants, curls, screens. Goes, curls, screens. That was like over 50% of his routes that I charted. Like, it is a very stripped down tree, but he shows some ability to get off the line and get open on slants. He's very much just a straight line X receiver. And if we're thinking about that archetype of player, Charles, like DK Metcalf is the high end. And I don't think Trey Harris is anything like DK Metcalf from a freak perspective. So that's probably off the table. Somewhere in the middle there is like Alec Pierce. And then the bottom of that, and this is the comp that scares me, even though I think like you could take Trey Harris in the second round, because when this type hits, it does hit big. So I don't mind taking him in the second round. The comp that scares me, though, is that his reception perception profile, and I shared this with Nate on Monday, is so similar to Terrace Marshall out of LSU. And that was Yeah, it's so scary similar. And Terrace Marshall is still the second lowest success rate versus man coverage player I've ever charted in the NFL. So, like, obviously that did not go well. That's the bottom end of that, like, straight line X receiver archetype. He had a little moment for Carolina where he was kind of useful, but only running nines and slants. So that's maybe what Trey Harris ends up becoming. But sacrificial X receiver, but can make you some big plays. That's kind of, I think, what you're hoping for with Harris. So would you take him in the second round? I don't mind taking him in the second round, even if he's a little bit developmental.
No, probably not. Let's go get a real football player. As they say, there's a lot of good linemen this year. I don't think we need to take a developmental X the second round. I don't know if this is right, but for some reason, like the comp that kind of came into my head when I was watching him, just off the size and some of the stuff they do after the catch, was that old Jaguars receiver, Mike Sims Walker.
That's a throwback, bro. You said Terrace Marshall came in the league 4 years ago.
yeah. Mike Sims Walker was drafted in 2007. He's been out of the league for well over a decade now. But he had a nice little moment. And then I looked at the combines, and Mike Sims Walker ran a 4.35. That's a bit faster than the 4.54 we're seeing from Trey Harris. So like, he's explosive. I think he's more explosive in terms of like having the potential to be a guy that can go up and get the ball, but he's not a burner. So I just feel like there's too many question marks here where I would just let someone else take the risk on trying to figure out and turn Trey Harris into like a consistent starting receiver in the NFL.
I do think with the Chiefs, he would make like some sense just kind of completing out that wide receiver room, you know, because they don't have like any vertical X's. And I think I would chase the upside a little bit. I'm not super, super bullish on him. Like, I think he'll just be kind of right around wide receiver 10 for me when I fully rank out the class. But like, yeah, again, it's a boom bust profile. No question about it. Like, if it turns into a Terrace Marshall zero, can't be surprised. If he's like an Alec Pierce type where he's going to give you downfield plays, I wouldn't hate that either. So, all right, let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll run through some few more late day two guys, maybe some early day three players right after this. All right, we are back. Charles, I think the producers buried Jaden Higgins in this section because I've got some conflicted feelings about Jaden Higgins out of Iowa State. I will share some of those as well, but I want to hear what you like about Higgins' game, because I do think it seems like people are a little bit higher on him than I am.
Oh, yeah. I like him a lot. Just it's not too complicated, but, you know, just big wide receiver. I think he's really smooth. In the open field, you know, maybe not like the best route runner, but I do think like at times, like he's got some good ability to win underneath, like on slants and shorter stuff. But obviously, like the biggest to me, I think the biggest part of his game that I like, which is also maybe a little bit concerning for the NFL, is some of the contested catches and just like the ball tracking, like just the ability to like see the ball and find the ball. I thought it was really, really impressive, which is not something that you can always, you know, take for granted with some of these big receivers. I like him a lot, man. Like I think when you're just looking at you start looking at the boxes, you know, 6'4", 215, had good production, comes to the combine, you know, doesn't run obviously the 4.3 that his teammate did, but still was in the 4.4s, which is a good time for his size, jumped well. To me, all of that translates on film. I don't think he's, I don't know if I'm at the point where he's like a number one wide receiver, you know, as an X. But I do think he's one of those bigger receivers that you can put in a lot of places, and maybe try to hunt mismatches against smaller defensive backs and maybe like even smaller linebackers at his size. But again, like I don't see quite the like when you're comparing to T-Mac, McMillan from Arizona, I think McMillan's a much more well-rounded player in terms of just you know, consistently like getting open. He was playing in a worse situation than these guys were, because even when you're Higgins, you still got Noel on the other side, and you know those guys kind of benefit each other. When you're in McMillan's role at Arizona, excuse me, you're the top dog. You're the guy. And I think that his skill set showed that at Arizona. To me, this is someone who's still maybe like trying to figure out some of the finer parts of getting open consistently. But I just think like the ability to find the ball and track the ball, like the hand-eye coordination is really, really impressive for Higgins. So I would feel pretty good taking him day two, maybe a hair lower than Noel, but I still think this is a starting receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he's a day two receiver as well. It's some of the like first round hype that I've seen from people. Like, I don't see that, because like just flat out, he's not a good enough separator to do that, especially against man coverage. Like, I know the route chart looks absolutely terrible, and I get it. Like, it's a lot of red here. He was like close to the average on digs and posts and stuff like that. So I don't actually think he's like an awful separator, but it's a little similar to like Keon Coleman last year, where Coleman I thought was a guy that would be, if he was an X receiver in the NFL, like, yeah, he's not going to separate enough and he's going to mostly be a ball winner, but he could be better maximized if, like you said, you move him around the formation, you look for mismatches, you know, especially as a big slot. Like, all the guys, and you know, I have a whole video breakdown of this on YouTube, I talk a lot about it. These guys who are sub 35th percentile success rate versus man and press coverage players in college, all of them who have gone on to be like high volume, successful starters in the NFL, they've all moved into the slot. Rashee Rice, Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, Amon Ross St. Brown, all those guys. I'd like to see that move for Higgins. I'd like to see him be kind of that jumbo slot receiver, because like you mentioned, there are good qualities to his game. He's stiff on intermediate routes against man coverage, but he's a smooth, like fluid mover underneath against zone. And I like the way he does some of those in-breaking routes. He does have great hands, man. I have some issues with him in contested situations, like fully extending that massive ass wingspan that he's got. I want to see that a little bit more, but you mentioned he tracks the ball well, and he just, when he's not contested, he does not drop passes. Zero drops in the games I charted this year. Really, really good hands. So yeah, probably not a number one receiver. I do think he has some flaws in his game, but somebody I'd take on day two. And for me, I would not do what the Bills did with Keon Coleman, which is literally only play him at X receiver. That was all they did with Coleman last year. I hope Higgins goes to a spot where he can move around a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. Higgins, and I agree with you on that. I think, like going to a team like Buffalo, I don't think it would suit Higgins well, because like you have your slot receiver in Buffalo. And it's funny because, you know, sometimes people will, they'll isolate some stats and they'll be like, oh, well, you know, so-and-so slot receiver, like when you look at their yards per route run from the outside, you know, it's actually a lot higher. So maybe they can do both. And then you see the number of routes they run the outside. And you go back and watch those plays. It's a lot of designer stuff, like where, you know, they're clearing out the middle of the field and they're going to run through on a slant. So I think he needs to come into an offense that has a handful of diverse receivers that can kind of do a little bit of everything, because I think that's what his role is going to need to be in the NFL to kind of maximize. Like, I think if you're an offense that has, like, you already have your X, Higgins makes sense because you can move him around and not have to really disrupt the flow of the offense. But if you have an offense that's, like, centered around having a slot receiver, I don't know if this is a good fit, because I think he needs to play there some too, to maximize where he is right now. Because honestly, I think underneath he does some pretty good stuff. Like you said, getting open when like he's good. I think he's good at beating like safeties and linebackers in low zones. And when he gets open, he's not dropping the ball. And that's something that I think can translate to the NFL. So you just need to have a little bit more diverse room, I think, for him to have the cleanest transition.
Yeah, teams like Houston, Denver, Arizona, teams that have like outside receivers, I think that he could make a lot of sense there for teams that kind of need that number two right now at this point. Yeah, no, you mentioned like the isolating stats. There is some, I remember the discourse on Treylon Burks as a prospect in that class, because like, look at his yards per route run versus press. I'm like, go watch those plays. And like, yeah, it's one route where he outruns like a press at the line and then gets like a 70-yard play, little bit of a boost in terms of that yards per hour run, because it was pretty clear he could not play outside. He has not played outside very well in the NFL. All right, next guy I want to talk about here, Alek Iomanner or Iomanor out of Stanford. Ex-receiver prospect Charles, he's the other spectrum of Jaden Higgins, where I kind of think he's got the makings of some decent route running. But, dude, he's got real deal issues with his hands. What do you think about Iomanor out of Stanford?
Gotta be honest with you. This is one of the guys in my blitz this week that I forgot to get to. So I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, a bunch of stuff about someone I haven't seen. But the bits of Stanford football that I have watched in passing this year have not been very fun.
Yeah, man. Like I said, he is, again, ex-receiver prospect, I think, for sure. But he compares to, like, a Romeo Doubs to me. He's got some build-up speed. He will win on some in-cuts against man coverage. So I do think he is an X, but he doesn't have a lot of burst off the line. So the press success rate's not good. And like I said, drops, bad contested catch plays. I do think I joked that he's a perfect Packers receiver because he blocks well. He does win on some of those in breaking routes, but he has a huge drop problem. Like, that sounds like a Packers receiver. So, and he's got size too. They're like size obsessed at this point. So, I do think he's okay. If he went at the end of day two, I think that would be fine. To me, he's somebody I'd rather take in the fourth round, because I think he's still pretty new to football. Like, he came from freaking Canada, you know? So, like, I think he's a guy that you could convince yourself, like, hey, he's a hard worker. He clearly cares. Like, if he's out there blocking like he does, like, he clearly likes football. Maybe he's still just growing into the sport. I wouldn't mind taking him in the fourth round. And, like, again, we're trying to hit, you know, maybe a double here with him as a prospect. But you are going to have to do some cleaning up and, like, being okay with some of the drops, because that's just going to be part of his game until he gets that sort of corrected. But Let's have you seen Kyle Williams yet? People are excited about Kyle Williams.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Give me your thoughts on him.
I don't know, I view him as like a wide receiver three.
Yeah.
This is where I kind of struggle sometimes with the draft stuff as I get a little older and my stamina decreases for some of this stuff. We're in the part of the draft where guys are just aggressively stamina. Yeah. Yeah, man, working hard over here. We're in the aggressively fine portion of the draft prospects to me. So I like Kyle Williams to me. It's kind of just like any other like kind of deep threat role player that you have. Like not quite, not like Tutu Atwell level, but not a number one. I think he's like a round three guy where if you're looking for some juice, you probably want to add him to your offense. I think he's better than, who was that Tennessee wide receiver the Giants drafted a few years ago?
Jalen Hyatt. Oh, my God. League's better, bro. League's
better. He's definitely better than that, but I do think like the same range-ish is probably appropriate for Kyle Williams.
I like him a little bit better than that. I would be okay with him as a second round pick, but I agree with you. Probably like a complimentary receiver who does, I mean, he's really good against press. I think he's got a good set of release moves and he gets open on underneath routes, especially. But he tracks the ball really well downfield. And this class is kind of loaded with some interesting yards after catch tackle breakers. And he is one of them. Like, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's not the fastest guy in the world. But he's tenacious with the ball in his hands. They gave him a lot of screens at Washington State. I don't know if he'll be like a screen guy in the NFL, but he can break tackles after the catch. And I found him to be a really interesting player. There are some people that are like crazy high on Kyle Williams. I'm not quite there, but I do think, again, good day two receiver. One of the guys in this class that I just think is a really good quality day two receiver. Somebody that I trust to get open short and underneath, but do something with the ball in his hands. I will say, just as a caveat, Charles, some of his RP data compares pretty favorably to like Elijah Moore and Jaden Reed. You know, there's some varying degrees of success with those two players there. I have tended to fall a little bit too hard for this type of receiver in the past, so I'm trying to be a little bit measured with my thoughts on Kyle Williams. But again, overall, I do think he's a good day two receiver, just like I felt about Jaden Reed. Good day two receiver, and I think he's returned value on that pick for Green Bay.
Yeah, day two is fine. I've seen some people, Kyle Williams round one. No, you're just bored. You're trying to kill time until the draft. Let's be real here. That's where a lot of these takes come from. There's too much downtime in between like the combine, start of free agency, and the drafts. People get bored and you start saying silly stuff.
I think, speaking of silly stuff, we are firmly in like day three zone at this point with these receivers. So I'm just going to throw out some names of some other guys that I have seen so far that I've charted a little bit here. Jalen Royals, who, again, another player that there are some people that are big fans of Jalen Royals. I have some questions. Isaiah Bond, Isaac Tesla, and Andrew Armstrong out of Arkansas. Xavier Restrepo out of Miami. Tez Johnson, who's another 150-pound guy out of Oregon. And Torrey Horton out of Colorado State. Any takes on any of those guys I just listed off here?
I would say you know me, Tez Johnson might be the fakest football player in the draft this year. Like 150 pounds, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. And
he gets eaten up by man coverage, man. Like that's the thing. Like with Tank Dell, it was like he was 160 something pounds, but he was good against press, he was good against man coverage. So it's like, okay, you could take a chance on that guy. And you know, we've seen the highs and we've seen the lows of Tank Dell so far in the NFL. With Tez, though, he just doesn't have that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why there's not too many 150-pound NFL players walking around. Like, you got to be really, 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 really good to make that work and, like, literally be able to exist. One guy you said there that I think is interesting, Isaiah Bond. Man, just speed for days.
Yeah.
Clearly got some, like, the character reviews are not coming back great. Had transferred from Alabama, went to Texas. I don't think he ever quite lived up to the talent level, but you know, at his best, like that's a really explosive player that they can take the top off of defenses. I guess the question with him is, you know, how do you dial into that consistently? Because the thing about these wide receivers are they're kind of becoming not a dime a dozen, but they're not like like the good ones aren't as rare as they used to be. So you, you better get on it fast before before they move on. But I do like Isaiah Bond. I think he's a quality player. And luckily, I don't have to make the decisions on whether or not I'll be comfortable adding to a locker room. I can just watch him and say, "Oh, I like that." You know, not the production wasn't great, but still some big time skills. And I think that that even showed while he was at Alabama too.
Yeah, Isaiah Bond. I guess the only question with him is just when are the Chiefs going to draft him? You know, tough locker room wide receiver. Let's get the Chiefs in the mix here. He's got speed. He seems like their type. But no, seriously, I have just the speed doesn't always translate to clean route running. There's clearly some details he needs to tighten up there. But yeah, I think you feel his speed when you watch it more than you do with Matthew Golden. Like if one of those guys was going to run a 4.29 at the combine, like I thought it was going to be Bond, who bragged that he was going to break Xavier Worthy's record and then came in well shy of that. So maybe don't do that. But yeah, the character stuff on him is pretty rough. A couple things I've just seen other folks say, and people have said some of this same stuff to me, but like Steve Palazzolo from the 33rd team said that he's heard his character issues are on par with Jermaine Burton. And then I heard Mike Renner, formerly of PFF at CBS now, he said on a show that he's heard it put to him that Isaiah Bond is the reason or one of the biggest reasons that Nick Saban retired because that's how bad it was. And by the way, Jermaine Burton was on that 2023 Alabama team too.
I imagine Nick is looking at his pile of money, looking at his championship rings like, man, I'm 70-something years old. I do not need to be chasing these 17-year-olds around anymore. But I hope he can get it together because, you know, Maybe Isaiah Bond can look at Jermaine Burton and say, okay, that's what's not to do here. Because we've seen the Jermaine Burton stuff. We all know he's a talented guy. We all know that he, at his best, probably could be a very productive starting wide receiver in the NFL. But to quote Ja'Marr Chase, when he was asked about what's going on with Burton last year, as a grown man, bro, he's going to do what he wants to do. So hopefully Isaiah Bond doesn't fall into the same traps as that.
Man, I love Ja'Marr. He needs a podcast. Like when he's done playing, he needs to be on this podcast.
It was funny though because like they asked him. Ja'Marr was like, "Man, we tried to talk to him, but that's a grown ass man. What are you gonna do?" That's the truth at the end of the day.
Yeah, it really is. Last two guys I'll hit on here because I don't want to go through all these day three guys. You know, like I do think Isaac Tesla and Andrew Armstrong are very, very different from Arkansas, but they're kind of like the poor man's version of the Iowa State guys, where I think both of them are interesting prospects. And I kind of actually like the slot guy, Tesla, a little bit more. Dude, Tesla is a freak. Like he blew up the combine.
I haven't seen Tesla play, but Tesla is freaky.
Yeah, tough time to be named Tesla.
Yeah, right.
but it's spelled different. So there's two A's in it. But if you look at his comps on Mock Draftable, they're like Javon Walker, Allen Robinson, Rome Odunze, Cedric Tillman, Andre Johnson. But he's like a slot receiver. It's really, he's just an interesting profile that I would love to take on day three and just try to figure it out because the production's not there, but I think the traits are there, and I think the film is interesting. And Jalen Royals is at least worth kind of expanding on here, Charles, just because there are people that really like him, but I'm kind of like day three with him. He's fast. He is good in the open field, but doesn't have a great sense of zone coverage. And he comes from, and I didn't mention this with Jack Besh, and I should have, that my biggest red flag with Jack Besh is that he's one of these receivers, at least I'm more willing to excuse it for him because he's played across the formation at times in his career. But in the games I charted for him, he's over 70% as the right outside receiver. And since I've been doing this, like, that is a huge red flag. That's a huge red flag if you're one of these guys that only plays on one side of the field. Especially if you're going to be a guy that moves around, like Drake London, DJ Moore, Juju Smith-Schuster, Rashee Rice. Those are the only four guys that I've charted as prospects that were 70% on one outside position that went on to be a hit in the NFL. London was just a freak, so I think that's kind of beside the point, but he's even moved around a little bit. DJ Moore has moved around a little bit, and Juju and Rashee Rice are big slot receivers, so I think Besh can be one of those slot receivers. With Royals, though, he's even more so. Like, I've got one snap in the games I've charted so far as the right outside receiver. He's always tethered to one side of the field, and it's a very Utah State, like, just total stripped down offense there. So I think he's a developmental day three speed receiver, but he's at least someone interesting on the third day.
Yeah, that's sounds like a good assessment. I haven't exposed myself to Utah State football yet, so I've been in some of the other minds. look, Charles Robinson and I finished up the All Juice team this year, and we were scrolling through. I was scrolling through the film of some of the seventh round / UDFA guys that we got from people in the league. Boy, hey man, it's rough out here. So there's a lot of college football teams, and not all that many of them are actually worth watching every week. And I say this to someone this is clearly like 1B in terms of favorite sports to consume for me.
Yeah, I charted Jalen Royals Utah State versus JMU this morning. That's where I'm at. So yeah, we are deep in the weeds of draft coverage here. deep in the weeds. By the way, not a great film for Jalen Royals. Like, if you're a Jalen Royals bro, don't watch that game, because JMU kind of like took him out. Which, we're talking about JMU here. What are we doing?
And this is a JMU where half that team played for Indiana this year from the year before. So this is like a JMU team that's been excavated to try and, because Kurt Cignetti took some guys over there to Indiana. So that's not even like the full JMU that maybe we've if you're from the South, that maybe you're accustomed to. This is a diminished version. So it's tough there at the bottom. There's an offensive lineman this year from William & Mary named Charles Grant. He's a quality player. But dude, I could only make it through I could only make it through like two games before I was like, I'm done here. I can't do game number three. The quarterback is like 130 pounds and left-handed and not that fast. It's tough to watch.
There's some tough to watch college film. I definitely had that thought this morning as I was working on Jalen Royals. Like, man, I can't wait till after the draft so I can go back to watch some NFL players. That is for sure. But we do it because the people love it. People love draft content. They love their incoming rookies, especially from a fantasy perspective. And we will have all these guys, of course, ranked, from a dynasty standpoint once we see where they get drafted. The real sickos, Charles, are the people doing dynasty drafts before the NFL draft. Like, and some of the people support and subscribe to this podcast, and we appreciate you, but you are you're truly sickos. And I say it lovingly, but you're sickos. Charles, I appreciate you doing this with me, man. This was great. Loved doing it live as well. Tell the people what you've got kind of coming up here. You mentioned the All Juice team, Football 301, all the things.
Yeah, we have a new episode of Football 301 coming out today. Nate and I are going to go over our top 75 big awards, which we're turning in. I've got my interview with Deion Sanders after on the same podcast. I believe it's up on YouTube already. We've got the All Juice team with Charles Robinson that got finalized a couple days ago. And you got the draft show at the end of the month. So this has kind of been my hell week. I'm going to try to disappear for a couple days and recharge before we have this final sprint. But we have produced a lot of work this week, a lot of projects that take a whole lot of time, a lot of sourcing, a lot of film watching. So please check that stuff out. All Juice team, like I said, is coming out. Still doing all the scholarship fundraising for Therese Paylor Scholarship at Mizzou, Howard. We'll have links for a t-shirt later. Charles and I will speak on the class, talk about Therese. We're still doing this thing, 5 years after he passed. So it means a lot to us. It'll mean a lot to you if you would check it out.
Absolutely. Make sure you check out the All Juice team. Show it some support. Those guys, not only is it for like a great thing, keeping Therese's memory alive, but it's also just a great product every single year that you guys do a lot of work for it. So definitely make sure you check that out. Charles is always hinting that he's going to like disappear for a few days. Like nobody is like this close to going off the grid than Charles McDonald. But before he does that, or maybe after he does it for a couple days, we do have one more positional deep dive. We're going to do that next week with Charles. We're going to talk about tight ends and offensive linemen, because there's some good players at both positions in this year's class as well.
Real players.
Finally back to some real football players for Charles. He humored me here with like a almost hour and a half receiver show. But yeah, we'll get back to some real football players for Charles next week, including some guys that do score fantasy points at the tight end position. But that is going to do it for today's show on Monday. We are going to be back. We have yet another banger edition of Mock Draft Monday. We're getting closer and closer. ESPN's Jordan Reed is going to join me for that show to share his favorite fits from his latest mock draft. Yeah, Jordan is the man. I'm very excited to be able to share that episode. That will be out on Monday, as I said. Until then, we are out.